Unlike most editions of Dreamland, this one is primarily visual. It is a podcast examining numerous images from the Moon and Mars. I would advise you to watch it on our YouTube channel, YouTube Whitley Strieber /Dreamland, instead of listening to it, because of the fact that it's going to be very hard to follow without access to the images. This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we have a guest who has never been with us before. Peter Robbins has been in the UFO field for longer than either of us wish to admit, the same as me, so you can be assured that cars had square tires when we started. That's how long we've been in it. No, we've been friends for a very long time. Peter started in this field in a very unusual way. Peter is an artist and, at this point, a ufologist of great distinction. And he has also been a degree in film history, and I think that probably helped him somewhat in the amazing thing that he has done. Today we are going to go through images of the Moon and Mars that will show you that not only is there extensive debris and indications of activity on both bodies, but that NASA has carefully airbrushed out a lot of blatantly clear evidence of such constructions in both bodies. Peter, welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you, Whitley. Pleasure to be on your show.
Well, you worked for many years with Bud Hopkins, but that is not how you got into this.
No.
Got into it in a very unusual way. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
When I was 14 and my sister Helen was 12, we were playing around on a lovely late morning when five silvery white disc-shaped objects in a rather precise V formation came at a very high rate of speed from my peripheral left and stopped directly over the house across the street. How large they were, I can't say. It depended on how high they were. But I many years later, when Helen and I first discussed it, because it became a repressed memory. And I do joke with people sometimes that if I have other repressed memories from childhood, I don't remember them. But I literally couldn't handle it, Whitley. There they were. Not shiny like stainless steel, more subdued like maybe brushed aluminum. But they were close enough and clear enough that both of us could agree years later when comparing notes that there was slightly off-color detailing around the edge of each that we could only read like windows on a commercial airplane at an appreciable distance. I know you, like me, have spent time with more people than we can remember who have had sightings and experiences. And in that memory that returned, I remembered, among other things, going through a reaction that I coined the term checklist reaction, and I've certainly documented it in more than 100 people that I've spoken with over the years, where you're minding your business, you're living your life, and you look up, and there it is, or there they are. My rational mind literally clicked off what I knew I wasn't looking at. These were not airplanes, helicopters, kites, balloons, dirigibles, strange-shaped clouds, a flock of birds, flotsam and jetsam. And in my hypnotic regressions, I did two in the years following the return of that memory, one with Bud and one with one of my first
Bud
mentors,
Hopkins.
a tough, no-nonsense New York City police detective named Pete Mazzola, who was a crack New York City detective, highly decorated, but also a fine UFO investigator. And in that moment of trying to grab onto something with the sophistication of the child actor Jerry Mathers in Leave It to Beaver, that's about how sophisticated I saw myself at the time.
Right.
I had a simple, rather happy childhood. My words on that tape are the words of a naive 14-year-old trying to come up with something. And I was saying to myself, must be some kind of secret government test plane. That's what it is, a secret government test plane. Naive and touching words, but I immediately knew that was nonsense. A plane had wings, it had a tail. It was like holding up dinner plates at a slight angle. They were ellipses. And we looked and we looked and we looked. And I learned many years later, my sister was having a very different reaction than I was. At 12 years old, she was still very much in the cusp of childhood. And this was wondrous and fascinating to her. We're informed by hormones and a boy's insecurities, and knowing that everything that I thought I knew was now in question, my anxiety reached such a peak that at a certain point, it might have been a minute or 2 minutes in, which is forever in kid time and a thing like that, I turned on my heels and went to run into the house. We were on the front lawn of a house we grew up in. And I didn't quite make it to the front door. For the first and only time in my life up till that point, I passed out cold. I think I was assisted in that I remember within 2 or 3 seconds of peeling off and my sister remembering my me disappearing in her peripheral right vision and knowing intuitively I was running into the house to tell her mom. I felt that I was running through molasses. My world slowed down interminably. So much so, and you know this profile all too well, that at a moment when you should be at the highest pitch, everything becomes kind of blasé and all the anxiety disappears. You're in sort of a state of fascination. And in the few seconds before everything went black, momentarily blue and then black, my last three thoughts were, I'm falling, but I didn't realize it. My motor function seemed to have just shut down. But for me, it was in slow motion and it was wondrous. I'm coming down toward the sidewalk from the lawn and seeing anthills, in the scoring in the sidewalk and thinking about the ants and their society, then looking at my mom's hydrangea bushes. They were beautiful. She was a great gardener and thinking how lovely they looked. And my last moment was, what a beautiful day this is. Bang, I'm out. Time passes. I open my eyes. I feel a throbbing in my forearm. I had skidded into the sidewalk. I don't think girls think like this. I don't think adults think like this, but I had scraped the skin right off of there. And I'm thinking, wow, what a scab that's going to make. Red badge of courage.
Yeah.
Helen's gone. They're gone. I pick myself up. I walk into the house. And intuitively, I walked up the stairs. My sisters shared a room at the very top of the stairs. I didn't even have to clear the top stair to see my sister, Helen, with her back to me, looking out the window into the backyard. I thought, private moment. Went back downstairs, living room, dining room, and there's my mom in the kitchen, framed by the door. And through the wonders of proper, well-administered hypnotic regression, it's remarkable what you can recall. Yes. There's our
Never
mother.
let any, they lie when they say those things about hypnosis. That lie is social engineering, compliments of the intelligence community.
It is terrible. I mean, it's, again, like in many things in life, the sensitivity and the skills of the practitioner, as well as their motivations, as opposed to, like you say, it's just been kind of brushed off as ineffective or distorted tool for learning. But I remember standing in the doorway and saying word for word, "Mom, Helen and I just saw some things in the sky over the Parker's house that looked like flying saucers from the movies." Later that day, my sister asked me if I wanted to talk about what we had seen, and I said no. We know from what much people suffer much more conventional, horrible trauma, whether it's abuse, where repressed memory comes in, and thank goodness it does, either forever or until they're able to deal with it. And within 2 or 3 weeks, I had simply managed to convince myself that what had happened to us, what we had seen, had not happened.
We're going to take a brief break for those on the free side. We'll be right back. We're talking to Peter Robbins. Shortly, we're going to get into some remarkable research that he has done about structures and that we can and cannot see on the moon and Mars that will convince you once and for all that NASA is withholding information, which it should not be doing. Now, but before we go there, Peter, what I would like to ask you is this. How was it that you and your sister began to talk about this at all? When did you start talking about it together?
At a certain point in my late 20s, I was in my loft in Chinatown. There were several factors that caused the memory to be released. I'm not a mental health professional. I'm just making educated guesses here. I think the most important one was that I was ready to deal with this material. Yeah. But what triggered it was just
first approach her.
My sister Helen, at the time, an aspiring poet living in the East Village, a mile or so north of me, who then went on to a quite a remarkable career as a singer-songwriter and performer. I thought, I'll just call her and ask her what she remembers. And then I thought, be careful. If you call her and tell her what you remember and ask her, is that what you remember? I won't ever know for sure. So yeah. I introduced the subject by saying, I've had a memory come back to me from childhood that I think we would have shared, and I need to know what you remember. But I'm concerned if I tell you what I remember first, you'll say yes or no, and I'll never know for sure. So let me set the scene. And I started to talk about how old we were, where we were physically at the time of day, the weather, how far apart we were from each other. And she cut me off mid-sentence laughing and said, stop, I know what you're talking about. And then proceeded to tell me what I remembered. With one variation, which we settled very quickly the next day, she wasn't sure whether it was 5 or 6. When we got off the phone, I did my very first UFO painting an extra one in the lower right. And when she came over the next day to my studio, I showed her the painting, but holding my hand over that one, and then removed my hand. And she said, you're right, it was 5 because it was even.
Yes. Well,
then the question started to come, how come we never talked about this? What she said to me next was the life changer. She said, the words were to the effect of, but there's more, and I don't know if you're going to like it. This is almost 50 years ago, Whitley. There was no term for grays. There was no area really of abduction research yet. I didn't know there were UFO conferences. I knew no one who was interested in the subject. I figured everybody who was crazy. And she started to talk to me about from that moment where she saw me peel away on the right. And she said, I knew you were running into the house to tell Mom. But when you went down, And when you fell down, I went up. I said, what do you mean? She said, I simply rose off the ground and started to ascend into the sky, in so many words, my hair flying. And we shared that blasé attitude. She said, I knew at a certain point, I'm looking down at your prone body. I'm seeing for the first and only time in my life, the top of our house gets smaller and smaller. I'm looking up. The bottom of these things are getting bigger and bigger. I know if whatever is happening stops, I will fall and I will be killed. But I wasn't thinking about that. I was just amazed that this was happening. Then the next thing she starts to describe are very clear memories, never forgotten, but never shared, of being walked through a curved metal hallway by half a dozen or so small grays, we would call them now, and one tall one. I said, can you describe them for me? And she described them, said, well, my 12-year-old mind described them as little doctors with big heads and big black eyes who talked to me in my head. The tall one was the one talking to her. And the next thing she knows, she's on the table. 12-year-old girl, naked, being probed, and just, gee, this is interesting, kind of.
Yeah.
The voices in the head, though, saying things that are so archetypical now, I've heard them countless times. You're special. We've seen you before. We'll see you again. You've seen us before. We will not harm you. We love you. The initial problem for Helen that remained with her for the rest of her life, she was no fan of these beings, was when she was hearing in her head, we will not harm you. She was experiencing pain in her genital area. And the next thing she knew, she's back on the ground and walking over to my prone body and bending down. She said, I saw your eyelashes starting to flicker, your eyes, and I knew you were going to be okay. And I stepped over you and went into the house to just go upstairs and think, which is when I woke up.
I think it's time for us to do two things. We're going to take another brief break, and then we're going to the moon. You ready? Okay. 3, 2, 1. We'll be right back. We're talking to Peter Robbins. He worked with Bud Hopkins for many, many years. Peter and I have been friends, and our friendship survived, more or less, the breakup between me and Bud, which I have never fully understood and don't want to discuss today. That's not the purpose of this show. Peter is a lovely man, and so was Bud. And Bud did a tremendous service to mankind. And that's my bottom line on Bud as to what happened between us. That's in Bud's, that is for Bud to that's for Bud. I don't know. All right. Now let's do this. You got interested in the moon and Mars you don't need to explain it. It's perfectly clear. You would be interested in these things. And you came to a point where you realized that certain things are being either ignored intentionally or hidden. And we will see as we go through some of these images, folks, some of the obvious airbrushing that's going on. And then you have to think carefully about what, for example, it means when a NASA director says, we have no evidence. That's false. We do. They do. And it's right in front of us. And after this show is finished, you're never going to believe again what they say about these two celestial bodies. Okay, now what I want to do, Peter sent me a whole group of images. And I would like to go through some of these images, Peter, if you will. In the first group you sent me, image 8, which is moon structures. Can you go to that image and we can talk about it, and then we'll move through to image 9 and so forth.
Part of NASA's challenge was when one thinks about the wealth of these images and the nature of the security that would have to be applied where anomalous structures or objects are apparent. One has to ask themselves the first question is, how many employees of NASA back then or at any time would have been cleared to know this information? And then going over, remember, these are high quality chemical prints taken with Hasselblad optical technology, the best available at the time. And from the time we started sending cameras up, what we used, great German optics, that you have to go micrometer by micrometer. The standard is a 10 power glass. And I grew up with a dad who was a jeweler. So for me as a boy, that jeweler's loop was always part of, you know, my playthings. And there were these things, and some of them were missed. But the ones that were caught, as you note, it sounds so conspiratorial.
Yes.
But in fact, conspiracies are real as well as nonsensical. And
we'll
in this case,
see some of that in this. They know they're hiding some of this. It's not an accident. But let's go to this first image, Peter.
Yeah. And that was on number 8 that you were talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. This is one that I would call an orphan image, in that we have no technical information on it, where the plethora of the ones that I've sent you, we know the longitude, the latitude, the mission, the day it was shot on, which is quite extraordinary. It
yes.
is a crater. And within the crater, and I'm going to take my copy and just take a closer look at it here, is what has to be non-natural formations.
That is correct.
They are, my first thought would be barracks or a long rectangular series of buildings. And there's no mistaking them. Only one of the things I first discussed is this phenomena whereby human beings tend to, it's almost that we want to find recognizable images in the randomness of nature. And I supply, you know, like the old man in the mountain, that kind of thing, cloud, the shape of a dog or what have you.
Yeah.
And you can only push that so far, no matter how objective you are. At a certain point, the scales tip and you realize this didn't happen in nature. And that is a perfect example. Again, we can't fully document that particular picture, but I take it very seriously.
Now, let's go to the next image. And this is something that obviously is not natural.
Yeah. What we now know is that on the moon and on Mars, there are, in different parts of the planetary bodies, extraordinarily high towers, some of them miles high.
Miles high. And this, what we're looking at now, folks, is a carefully airbrushed image of such a tower that has been it's been airbrushed in such a way that unless you are very careful, you're not going to see this.
Yeah.
This is not unintentional. This was done on purpose to obscure the fact that this is an unnatural object. This is a tower that was built and is hidden.
This one was from the Clementine mission. And once your eyes adjust and you are able to see figure ground relationships a little more clearly, you see there are surrounding areas also that have been completely hazed out. This is not a geological feature. And that's a very important note to stress.
It is absolutely not a geological feature.
This is intentional.
To image 10 and the next image, which is
there, son of a gun.
Go ahead.
It's almost like I don't want to be recognized, so I'm going to put on a lot of clothing that's the basic color of the background. I'll still stand out like a sore thumb, but you won't be able to see me for me. You'll see this hazy.
Now, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at structures, or how tall are these?
several miles tall.
Several miles tall. So that's, we're not looking at beings, I hope.
No. No, these seem to be, for lack of a better term, and for that cadre of researchers, that this is what they do. The term tower is the only, or towering structure is the best we can come to applying a term to what we're seeing here.
Now, now let's go on to the next image. And we see here in this image, three or four airbrushed areas. If you look closely, you see there's quite a bit of airbrushing that's going on, including one area on the far left.
Yes,
which is like the one of the structures that we saw in the first image.
Yes,
this is something that is a similar structure that has been airbrushed out. Now, how
almost long, completely, but not completely.
Not completely, exactly.
And if you look at that structure, you know, the straight line below it, just at the bottom right of it, you'll see three dots equal distant from each other, clear as a bell, that were missed in the process of fusing it. I keep coming back to these photos and seeing more. Sometimes I disagree with the way they're characterized, but that's a small point. It's just like a longhouse, and next to it is this tower. And who knows how large the building is.
Huge, isn't it? It's actually huge.
Yeah.
Truly. Now, if you look at the tower in the front, you'll see it has two airbrushed areas on the sides, right?
That's
at the
right.
top. That it means that it goes up, and then it has kind of decks on it.
Or that's on the ground, and it was just a convenient way to cover the ground.
Oh, yeah, there's something on the ground.
That's it. We don't know. And we don't have a figure ground scale relationship, unfortunately, in these images. Also, I mean, if you look in the upper right hand, you'll see kind of a ridge of, dots joining that don't look quite like they belong there. We'll get into more of that later.
Yeah, I see the two dots there very clearly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on. All right, now we're on Mars at this point.
Yes.
Okay, folks, that's not natural. That is a ruin, is what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You know, we all know about crystals and how they grow, but this has no reference to that. What we're looking at is something we've all seen on Earth. It's the foundation of a simple rectangular building. That's the only way I can read it.
Yeah, of course, exactly.
It's that simple.
In the old days when I was on the internet, but this is before, I've always thought my abduction experience had to do something to do with the fact that Dick Hoagland, who we had a mutual friend, Margot Adler, and she called me up one day and she said, "Whitley, I've got something here that I think would be very interesting to you." And I went over to her house and there was Dick Hoagland, and he showed me images of the Mars face.
Yep.
And I got involved in the internet relay chat about that. Mm. And at one point, looking at the D&M pyramid, and it looks like it has been penetrated by a projectile at the base and collapsed.
Yeah.
Someone in the internet relay chat said, "Mars was murdered." What happened there? This is not an intact structure. It's a why?
One of the intriguing mysteries is we have no way to date any of what we're seeing. Are these images referential of activity 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 500,000 years ago? Exactly.
Billion. I mean, you could be anything in terms
of it. We don't know. Or a combination. If you know, like the UFO phenomenon on Earth, it didn't start in 1947. This may be part of the genesis of these two planetary structures, our lunar moon and Mars, where things went on for countless eons. And now, who knows, maybe they're going on underground, or we haven't seen the photos of more current activity.
Is the next image the same object taken from a different angle? Is that what that is? I wasn't sure.
No, the two foundational pictures, the first one with kind of that ghost rectangle behind it, that's the last one we have on the moon. And then the one that's yellowed, you know, in terms of the coloration, that's on Mars.
Oh, I see. I see. I made a mistake.
That's where we make the transition.
Okay, so that was the last one on the moon, meaning that that dust means it must be incredibly old.
Yes.
Yes, because that's moon dust gathered over probably millions of years. Meaning,
there you go. There's no wind blowing it around.
The structures there could all be long abandoned.
Yeah.
So why does NASA hide them? Are they hiding our past? Is that what this is really about?
I think, once again, the same way that we have not seen world leaders coordinate media appearances and say, my fellow citizens, it's my solemn duty to tell you that the Earth is being visited by other intelligences, who knows when, who come and go with impunity for reasons we only guess at. It's, I think, one more manifestation of that clique of human beings who have always been the ones to move the chess pieces around, the power brokers, to withhold information that, number one, points to the fact that we human beings, exemplified by men who hold the chess pieces, are desperately doing what we can to not reveal how helpless, how out of control reality really is, as opposed to, it's much easier to shoot the messenger. The classic ridicule that is associated with UFOs and aliens since 1947, the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, raised eyebrow, little green men in flying saucers, started to lose a good deal of its impact at the end of 2017 with those two important articles published in the New York Times, written by three great journalists, Ralph Blumenthal, Leslie Kane, and Helene Cooper. I think we're in a post-ridicule era now, although ridicule is still coming back, and we will see it grow even stronger as more and more whistleblowers come forward, as more and more elected officials with some clout take the subject seriously publicly. But denial is crucial to maintaining the illusion of power. And we can't talk about this, because the first thing that we have to admit, if we do, is how long we have been intentionally lying about it. And that's a touchy subject.
Well, yeah, it's a touchy subject, but what I'm interested in is getting, I don't care too much about how long we've been lying, they've been lying about it for a long time, but let's get past that and try to find out the real question, start to explore the real question, which is inevitably, who in the hell are we? Because we're sitting here in the middle of the ruins of another world that was here in the distant past and was interplanetary. So what in the name of goodness is going on here? And who were those little men, little people who abducted your sister?
Yes.
My God, what an incredible, I mean, I just have to pause, folks. This is an incredible edition of Dreamland. Peter is such a diffident, you are such a sweet, diffident, gentle man. You just exude all of that. But Folks, we are looking at a very dangerous revolutionary sitting here with a little smile on his face. Come on. Okay, let's go to the next picture. We are now, here's the Mars face.
Yes.
Is that the Mark Carlotto rendering of it? Yeah.
It is. And like so many of us, when we first saw this image, it was electrifying.
Right.
I will also say in 1990 or so, when he was really just making his mark as a public figure, I met Richard Hoagland. He was living in Red Bank, New Jersey at the time. My sister and I were sharing an apartment up in Inwood, right by Fort Tryon Park, and not that far from the entrance to the George Washington Bridge. And I remember inviting him over for dinner to get to know him. And the three of us had a very nice dinner. And he had a copy of his first book at the time, The Face, Monuments of Mars.
I know a lot about the writing of that book. I had something to do with it, but I'm not going to go into that.
I knew nothing about the writing of the book, but I was terribly excited. And as is sometimes the case when you're involved in a breakthrough project like this, the inscription was, you know, this is all about to break open, if only. After that, I heard Richard speak several times at the United Nations.
Yes.
And then go on to various conference lectures, of course. But what troubled me, first, you know, moving to look at the next image where we see it in some context to other landmark areas of Cydonia.
Okay, folks, we're moving to the next image and seeing it in context. But let me just briefly say that the previous image was the one that was rendered by Dr. Mark Carlotto,
yeah,
who has been a friend for a long time, yeah, and was just on Dreamland recently. And interestingly enough, Mark's interests in this have shifted to our own lost past.
Oh, my.
So, and it's as if he knows on some level. Mark's had high security clearances, and he's worked for the National Security Agency in imaging work and so forth. He really knows what he's doing. And now let's go ahead and go to the context. We're seeing now the face and some other objects here. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Here we're actually seeing them in proportion to each other. We have data on them right here because this particular site always notes the latitude, longitude, all of that important detail material. When it was explained to me that we had basic measurements for this structure and that it was several miles long and at the tip of the nose, half a mile high, you know, talk about earthworks. It was, it's such a 60s phrase, but it really was mind blowing, and it built up a tremendous interest worldwide. I think it was something that had to be diffused. And when NASA kind of broke the bubble with the image that's put forward in image number 15 of mine,
yes,
I remember thinking, oh gosh, you know, I guess it was too good to be true.
Mark said he's got clear evidence that the image was, that the object itself was altered.
Yeah. And it took me some years to think back.
Two images.
They had
been damaged on purpose.
Yeah. What
does that tell you? We are looking at, we've just seen all kinds of imagery that is being airbrushed out.
Yeah.
We're being lied to here, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, wake up to this. This image, they knew when they said it was just a bunch of stones that the image would be altered. Do you see what that's saying to you, folks? It's saying to you that they are in contact and involved with someone who does not want us to know the truth and has access to Mars and the ability to make massive changes in a gigantic earthwork like that.
Either that or photographically. they were able to doctor it in such a manner, whether or not they were able to do it physically or technically, we're still seeing what I am convinced is the manifestation of an extraordinary deception.
Yes, absolutely. A tremendous and terrifying, quite frankly, deception.
It follows for me the debunker's mantra, which I have defined as it can't be, therefore it isn't, therefore it's something else. And it's right. My self-assigned job to pat you on the head and give you some pseudoscience.
Could it be that they've gone mad and that they are, in effect, altering reality because it doesn't fit their expectations? That this isn't a conspiratorial cover-up at all, but a sort of an outcome of a psychosis that's within the scientific community at NASA?
It's that equivalent of nothing to see here, folks. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
That earlier image was just a play of light. It was a quirky refraction caused by something technical that you don't understand because you're not an optics specialist. But trust us, we're NASA JPL, and we agree. Wouldn't it have been great if it was real? Oh, gosh. But no, you know, it's our imaginations, and we all understand how, you know, we want this to be true. But, you know, a lot of you have seen a lot of science fiction and are romantic in your thoughts, and this would be wonderful, self-fulfilling idea and destiny of reality and fantasy coming together. Bullshit.
Let's go on to image 18. That's the image after next. And this is an example of something that wasn't airbrushed out, but probably should have been. Maybe they didn't notice it.
And there are, of course, a number of variations on this doorway.
Yes.
I find it, well, not funny, but ironic in the sense of, like, the lady doth protest too much. There is I wouldn't call it a, well, maybe, I don't know if it's a front for NASA, but there is a website called CNET, Your Guide to a Better Future. And it talks about lifestyles and technology and electronics and things. And they went out of their way to make this note relative to the picture that we're seeing in the related ones. Quote, not a doorway on Mars, your guide to a better future. Quote, knock, knock, who's there? Nobody. This NASA Curiosity rover image from May 7th, 2022 does not show a doorway on Mars. Despite some internet speculation to the contrary, the doorway-like appearance is in a cliffside snapped in May 2022 is due to the angles of light and shadow and shapes made by the geology in the area of Gale Crater. In other words, you're an idiot if you believe what we're saying here, but we're going to say it anyway. What you think you're seeing, you're not seeing because it can't be there. It's, again, angles of light, shadow, and shapes made by the geology. Oh, well, that sounds rather technical. And it sort of looks like a doorway, but what do I know?
Well,
it's infuriating. It's infuriating.
We'll move on. It's clearly nothing carved, no entrance. It doesn't look like what it is because it can't be there. I understand you, Peter. So we're done with that. What we're looking at, folks, is not what it is. We're going to go ahead and move on. Let's now go to another angle, which is image 19. And that's not what it looks like either. It couldn't be. It must be something else because that couldn't be there. Right?
This is when these were taken, you know, names are assigned. It was called Inca City because there are instances where ancient civilization remains taken from aircraft or satellites have a organized sensibility. At the same time, I'm willing to concede, I know nothing formal about geology, but I'm not saying it's out of the question that things don't fragment and break up or photograph as though they're organized structures.
Right.
And at the same time, even leaning as far as I can into complete objectivity, it sure looks like the remains of a great deal of organized work, not unlike certain imagery that one can find in Iraq or Syria or Central
Yes.
America, looking down upon the remains of an ancient, long gone civilization.
Well, exactly. Let's move on now to the next image. It's image 20. And what are we looking at there?
Unless there's some kind of erosion that happens on the surface of parts of Mars that leaves this extraordinary patterning and seeming divisions with very high ridges, then what we're looking at may well be the remains of an ancient settlement of some sort.
Go now, if we can, to the second set of images.
Yes.
And let's start with the first image.
Yeah. What we're looking at here are referred to as, well, tunnels, not tunnels, but passageways. They're not natural seeming, and they go on for miles. It seems to be transparent or translucent. We see a bright dot of light in, you know, making itself.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, folks, I'm going to shift this to the next image. It's a close-up.
Yeah.
And you
there
can
you go.
See where it's not natural. That's not a natural. It looks like, my God, I mean, it looks like a device that's riding along on some kind of a rail.
Yes.
Or a magnetic levitation thing.
Well, I mean, understandably, for any, organic beings, unless they thrive on, the kind of x-rays and insane temperatures and terrible conditions that we would encounter on the surface of Mars, to find a way to create passageways. There's been speculation that these might be like pipelines to run water through, or highways traverse, which makes sense to me, or both.
Yeah. And of course, the scale is massive, huge.
And that in itself is worthy of tremendous awe, that some intelligence found a way to create this series. And they are in different parts of Mars. They go on for miles and miles in places. No opinion has ever officially been put forward by NASA. It's just, a quirky anomaly of the surface in
yes.
So many words. But it ain't. This is intentional. Some civilization,
I get that. Yes.
Beings, intelligences spent time and tremendous effort creating these things for their own purposes.
Yes. Now let's go on to this point, to image 8 and image 9. This one, I thought, these two images, this could be a case of pareidolia.
Yeah, and it certainly could be. But that blue arrow pointing down on the left is isolating what could be a circular rock with some indentations. But when we close in, we see, it looks a bit like a skull. And one can say, is it out of the question that those two circular holes that would define, the orbits of the eyes could happen in nature? Sure, it could. And I tend to want to go with the most conventional explanation in deductive reasoning, which has always guided my research. It usually is the most conventional one, and unfortunately, that's very disappointing if you're looking for the exotic. But this, you know, in the words of the great late Stanton T. Friedman, this one would be in my gray box, undecided. However, as we move on to the next pair of images, oh, no, I'm sorry, guys, it's the two earlier, I guess, where we see, once again, a what really looks like a skull, but almost with a light bulb sitting on top of it. I'm damned if I can explain that as a random anomaly. Maybe it is, but we are dealing, of course, with a number of extraordinary images that seem to litter the surface of the planet. You saw a great deal more of them in the presentation that I did in Hull, England in September. But
yes,
this one sure looks like it doesn't look natural. It doesn't look natural.
Now let's go on to image 39. This is an image taken by the Mars Opportunity rover.
Yeah.
And what exactly are we looking at here?
Damned if I can say it. To me, it looks like a kind of lopsided vehicle.
Yes,
we're
and
looking
that
at
bright, what is that bright thing in front of it?
Well, it being that we've been told there's no water on the surface of Mars, we hear a lot about it's frozen in the permafrost and it's down there and we can get it out, but we see pictures to the contrary. It might be the equivalent of a pond. Otherwise, make your best educated guess. I'm damned if I know.
It's not a pond because it's much too cold for a pond of water there.
No,
unless
well,
we're somehow
frozen
or not being told the truth. Possible too, I suppose.
That's another thing as well.
I want to now go to image 12, image the Mars Charon, image 41, Mars Charon 2.
Oh, yes. This one is a favorite of mine in that my travels have taken me around the United Kingdom more than 20 times. And I'm fascinated by Neolithic and pre-modern remains, although cairns do come into the Bronze Age and into really early medieval times. It's simply a piling up of stones to mark an area that is significant to those that did it. In some cases, in England, it can be a well, or it can be a burial site. And when we go to image 41 and we see it close up, it looks just like a pile of stones.
Yes.
It couldn't have happened by accident, is my thought. It was
it's
intentional.
Very strange, sitting out there all by itself.
Yes.
Just sitting there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and then if you go to image 42,
yes,
comparison with a couple of other Charons here on Earth.
Yes.
And frankly, it does sort of look like something like that, but it also caught my eye that it might be something like a plant, just so strangely, you know, in other words, it might be a living object. You know, it's,
I hadn't even thought of that, and why not? We do not know what we're looking at in so many of these cases, and we're just, again, making our best educated judgments. My mind went to what for me was the most obvious, which I still tend to lean into.
Well, there's no way to tell. We just don't know.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something very strange because it's sitting out there all by itself.
Yes.
With nothing around it. It's not It looks something, it looks like that something that's been put there that's very different from its surroundings.
We also have to say to ourselves, if this was intentional, it was very intentional. It's one of the most basic human activities to pick up stones and to put them in another location to mark something that's significant to you and the beings that you are moving these stones with.
Yes.
It couldn't have happened by accident. And this is one of the few where we have a really compelling comparison all over the earth in different areas, although I would guess parts of Neolithic England have the largest concentration of
Yes,
them.
and Ireland does too. There's loads of
Yeah.
cairns in Ireland
Up
as well.
in the Orkney Islands, which I was fortunate enough to explore for one summer, which has Neolithic monuments that absolutely leave Stonehenge in the dust, but it's so remote that not very many folks will make their way up there, tucked in below the Arctic Circle. These are almost the definition of an enigma.
Right. Now I want to go now to get ready for this, folks. Image 43.
Oh boy, here we go.
All right. Now, what in the world are we looking at, Peter? What do you think that is?
Well, first, I will say here we have an example of one of these dedicated individuals who, rather than studying trace cases or radar returns or, the historic record or interviewing UFO witnesses, is going over these photographs, micrometer by micrometer, leaving their name, giving me information. I look at it again using deductive reasoning and trying to have what's plausible be the most mundane example, explanation rather than the most exotic. I'm still seeing a bottle, a glass bottle is what I'm
I am
seeing.
too. I'm seeing a bottle.
That's, I don't have any alternatives in my mind.
No, me neither. And it's not an artifact from one of the rovers either, because there's nothing like that on the rovers. It's a glass bottle, and not only is it a glass bottle, you can see a line, and it makes it look like it's about four-fifths full.
It does, although that could be a refraction from the rock behind it. What
Well, that's
intrigued
true.
me, maybe as much or more, is that it's standing up as one would stand a bottle.
I wonder how large it is.
Once again, that is, I wish we had some way to judge that. From this picture, once again, educated guess. Sounds stupid. I'm going to guess it's about the size of a standard earth bottle,
Yeah.
I
Let's
don't
and
know.
remember, folks, that somebody. Probably it's as Peter said, it was possibly photographic, but somebody physically altered the Mars face apparently. They were looking at something they left behind. I wonder where this is in relation to Mars face, and we don't know that.
No, we don't have, we could possibly, it's processed by a guy who went online, no, whose name or whose pen name was Rami Bar Ilan, and this image was isolated by him a few years ago in 2020. I would guess that we can chase him down because he is a known individual in the world of
We'll
this
attempt
area.
to track him down, folks, before we do the show. And if we are able to chase him down, I will note
Yeah.
that in the text of the show.
He'd be a wonderful guest. But, again, I strain to find something more conventional, to talk myself out of what is admittedly the most exotic, radical, paradigm shifting interpretation. And I don't have anywhere to go with this one.
Well, the next one. Image 44. It's not a bottle. It looks like suspiciously like a World War I hand grenade of Italian manufacture.
Or a random Christmas tree decoration.
Christmas tree. It's just amazing. That is absolutely not a Mars rock. It's not.
Again, is it possible it's some physiological remnant of some chemical process that took place that bubbled up? And also,
Yes.
this looks like it could be a vessel as well to
And
hold
again, we get
liquid.
to the old, there's no word. There's a word for pareidolia,
Yes.
but there's no word for saying something is something that it isn't because it can't be what it is. That's what we would do. We have to do. We have to say that because there can't be some kind of a bottle or whatever this is on Mars, it must be something else.
There should be. I'll bet the Germans have a word for it.
Right. Now, the next image is
It looked, my first thought was it's a stack of old coins, which
yeah,
would give it
that
a
was my
very.
two, and I thought, my God, wouldn't it be interesting if we could get a look at them and find out they were where they were from.
It looks
So
like we're about
amazing.
maximum resolution. Even with advanced optical techniques, one wonders if you can get a clear image. But once again, my first thought is, how can I have this be something natural, which I'm willing to accept and in a way looking forward to it? I don't want to be classified as a believer in anything. You either have the evidence or you don't. And once again, I am compelled to conclude that what we're looking at here did not happen in nature. That's as good as I can get.
Yeah, me too. As good as I can guess, it doesn't have this is these are things that we're looking at three things now, folks, that probably don't happen in nature, but maybe they do happen in nature on Mars because Mars also is a practical joker and wants to really screw with our heads.
There you go. If that could be established, I would be fine. I'd lose no sleep. I have, again, this is hardly a thing that I'm built my reputation on that I have to defend. I was curious. I started to look deeper into it, like any curious person. And what I found is incredibly interesting and potentially explosive.
Yes, but only if we want it to be explosive. Only if NASA decides to say they don't understand these instead of just being silent about them.
Yes,
But
that would
remember
be a breath of fresh air.
that airbrushing, they're trying to hide something.
Yeah, no
They are
question.
supposed to, someone is telling them to hide stuff.
I
And
agree.
since it is not, this is not, it does not look like active, they're trying to hide something about the past.
Yes.
And that's why in The Fourth Mind, I start out with a quote from the Chan Thomas book, Adam and Eve, The Adam and Eve Story Retold, that book that is partly classified still to this day, by Chan Thomas, has been written back in the 60s about Earth changes. And I just think that there's something that someone very powerful and maybe beyond human in terms of power doesn't want us to know.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to not know things and sit here and say it's not what it looks like. I'm here to say, hey, that's what it looks like because it probably is what it is. And what the heck's going on here? Okay, let's go cross one, the next image. Now, what we're going to do here is we're going to go through a series of images, folks, and we're going to be zeroing in on a particular area. You see that red arrow in the middle of this image.
That was very important to me in putting together my initial presentation. The idea that we have a real figure ground relationship going on. So we don't see any details here, but we do see where the action is going to be. Shall we move on to the next?
We'll move on to there. And by the way, folks, I've completely forgotten doing breaks, which is always annoys everybody who works with me. But I have, in fact, done that. And before we move on, I'm going to take another break. And if you're a subscriber and not seeing the breaks, will you please buy The Fourth Mind? Because it will keep us going, since we don't have enough subscribers. The site will fail if the book fails. But the book's not going to fail. The book's doing very well. And the book is as huge a breakthrough in some ways, and more a breakthrough than this show, which I regard as one of the great breakthroughs in the history of Dreamland. Okay, We're moving down the road now. We're getting a little closer. Next, what are we seeing?
So we have a red arrow pointing at, it looks like one of the simplest recognizable images here for human beings, a cross.
Right.
And the blue arrow is pointing at what could be the corner of a particular kind of stone that has broken or formed in a way that is very organized. But that cross shape, what could account for that in nature? I'm not sure.
Let's take a closer look.
And we move on to the next. Here we see what is decidedly a cross. And let's remember that because it is such a simple elemental shape, it was appearing thousands of years before Christianity. It's the simplest identifiable form, whether it's a cross or an X or two lines intersecting. But here it seems to be freestanding.
Yes.
And that's quirky because we're looking at the world of rocks. And one wonders, I mean, it could be made of rock, but it's
a very strange formation if it's not natural. If it's natural. Now, the next one, folks, let me assure you that badastronomy.com has already looked at it, and they will tell you that this is a rock. And let's look a little closer now at this rock.
It's a heck of a rock.
Now I've moved on to image 25 that gives us a closer look at this. This is not a rock. Is it a statue, or is it someone actually jumping? What is it?
This is an image. I'm going to see if I can find what was given as an official explanation for it here. NASA Spirit rover delivered an image in 2007 showing a view of a craggy rock formations across the surface of Mars. One dramatically shaped formation stood out in the form of what looked like a little walking humanoid. The popular UFO blog UFO Sightings Daily ran with speculation that the rock formation is a female figure, likely made by aliens. However, the Planetary Society, and listen to the way language is deployed here, the Planetary Society was quick to call the object an optical illusion. And another excellent example of pareidolia, the tendency for our minds to assign familiar patterns to random shapes or sound. We were wrong, Whitley. It's an excellent example, not a routine example, of pareidolia.
It's actually there.
Well, this is a big problem as far as trying to read it as a random illusion. And when we go on to the next image, that
image
is
55. Okay, now, folks, we're looking at something that is Clearly, the airbrushing in the bottom half of this image, look closely, you're going to see two little black corners in that airbrushing, and a third one at the point on the right. And that would suggest that whatever the three round things are at the top of the image that you can see are something very strange in almost certainly. Now let's get a little more into this. We're going to move down now to the next image. Let me just take a note here where we are. Because I've got a we got to get all this edited correctly.
Sure.
Okay.
Out of context, this image is almost boring looking.
Yeah, but
It's
what's not boring looking is the fact that it's airbrushed and there are those two corners that weren't quite airbrushed away.
and the fact that it's on Mars.
And on Mars. And now we have the next image, the Mars 56. You can see clearly that something with a sharp corner that is
Yes.
black in color has
Yes.
been airbrushed out, leaving just that corner. And it's almost as if someone at JPL ordered to do this is saying, you know, I think this is an awful thing to do. I'm going to just leave a hint that maybe I can get away with. This almost looks like it's left that corner
Yeah.
left purposely. And I don't
That's
blame them. I would be sickened if I had to do this.
I hadn't even thought of that. That's actually rather inspiring because somebody would have taken a great personal risk. I tended to think, I've covered enough. It's lunchtime. I'll come back to this. Oh, I forgot. But you're
Yeah.
right. This
Now
may
look
have
at
been a very
the
courageous,
next image,
intentional.
which is image 57.
Yeah.
Again, that's not an artifact of the, that is not a dropout. It's not an artifact because why would you airbrush away? And it's, if you look carefully at the airbrushing where the black arrows are, you can
Yes.
see there's something under it, a
It's.
complex object of some kind.
Yes. Yeah. It's so intriguing. How could anybody not want to know what's there? The intention to deceive is apparent in all the photos we have looked at where there's intentional obfusion. And like you say, somebody, some agency, some powerful, extremely powerful group of individuals above the pay grade of, I'm sure, even the director of NASA at the time said, do this.
Yes.
And you do it. It's your job. And you have maybe even an added security clearance for knowing it, which would allow you to be prosecuted at a higher level if you
Yes.
were to break security about it. There are individuals who are briefed on this, who know about this, whose job it is. And we're stuck with that reality, is what it comes down to.
Intention to deceive. I think I'm going to title this show NASA colon Intention to Deceive.
Well, unfortunately, they've earned it on this one.
You have really, in assembling all of these images and the other patient, careful people who have found these images by all of their meticulous work. This is groundbreaking. No one has ever put a show like this together before. No one has ever put a presentation like yours before together before. And those guys and women, I presume it maybe I don't know who exactly was involved, but the books will you he's Peter's given me imagery of all of the books, and I will have them listed. An immense effort has been made by ordinary people to say to whoever is out there, we're sorry. We do not believe your lies. Thank you, Peter, for helping us to face the truth. We don't know who we are. We don't know where we are. We don't know what our past is, but something happened that somebody is very eager that we not know.
Agreed with
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Because then we would have the power that they have and
yes.
diminish themselves in their own perception, for starters.
This is the core of the new book of the Fourth Mind. It is, we have to understand and know ourselves and our own history, and that means the history of this solar system for a start, if we are going to actually be able to break out into the stars and make mankind a part of this cosmos instead of an isolated prisoner on a little dying planet far away, where we are now. Peter Robbins, thank you.
You're most welcome, my friend. A true pleasure and an honor, and looking forward to the next time we actually get to sit down together.
Yes. Well, we will sit down together on your show, I believe.
Oh, yes. But I mean in corporeal, three-dimensional, actual reality, as
oh, yeah.
opposed to...
Well, hopefully I'll be in New York sooner or later. I've been traveling too much lately, and I gotta settle in for a while, but I'll be out on the road again, you may be sure.
I look forward to it, Willie.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.